Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the Murder Tape Chronicles. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present Under the Ice, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1. Beneath the Surface. The morning sun cast a pale glow over the frozen expanse of Silverwood Lake, its light reflecting off the surface like shards of broken glass. The stillness was broken only by the sound of an industrial chainsaw cutting through the thick ice. A group of divers, bundled in heavy gear, worked diligently to prepare for their descent. Mitch Carter, the lead diver, leaned over the edge of the freshly cut hole, peering into the inky depths below. He wiped a gloved hand across his mask and exchanged a glance with his partner, Sam. "Looks like we've got a good entry point," Mitch said, his voice muffled through the layers of fabric and the chill in the air. "This better be worth it," Sam muttered, adjusting the strap of his oxygen tank. "I didn't sign up to play ice fishing." The team wasn't there for recreation. They were conducting an environmental survey for a new development project slated to break ground in the spring. The town of Silverwood was small, and this lake, serene and untouched, was one of its few natural landmarks. Mitch descended first, his body disappearing into the icy water with barely a ripple. The world beneath the ice was silent and alien, illuminated only by the beam of his flashlight. The light cut through the darkness, revealing underwater vegetation swaying gently in the current. As Sam followed, his flashlight passed over something metallic. He paused, his breath hitching. There, half buried in the sediment, was the unmistakable outline of a car. "Mitch," Sam's voice crackled through the comms. "We've got something here." Mitch swam back, his light joining Sam's. The car was old, its paint faded and peeling, but its shape was unmistakable. The two divers exchanged a wordless look before surfacing. The sheriff's department arrived within the hour, the icy air buzzing with activity as curious townsfolk gathered at a safe distance. Sheriff Dan Wheeler, a middle-aged man with a weathered face and tired eyes, surveyed the scene with a mix of intrigue and unease. "What are we looking at?" he asked Mitch, who was still dripping wet and clutching a thermos of coffee. "It's a car, Sheriff," Mitch said. "Been down there a long time. You're gonna want to see what's inside." The retrieval process was slow and meticulous. As the winch groaned under the strain, the car broke through the ice, its rusted frame dripping with water and tangled in lake weed. The crowd murmured as the vehicle was lowered onto the snow-covered shore. The forensic team worked quickly, prying open the frozen doors. Gasps rippled through the onlookers when a skeleton, still wearing remnants of a tattered jacket, was revealed in the back seat. Sheriff Wheeler stepped closer, his breath visible in the cold air. Inside the car, nestled among the bones, was a small pink backpack. He reached for it, carefully unzipping the faded zipper. Inside, he found a name tag. "Melissa Harrow." "Melissa Harrow," the sheriff whispered, his voice heavy with recognition. He turned to his deputy, his expression grim. "Get Clara Briggs on the phone. Now." As the forensic team continued their work, whispers spread through the crowd. Melissa Harrow had been a name etched into the collective memory of Silverwood. Her disappearance in the summer of 1987 had shaken the community to its core. Sheriff Wheeler stared at the car, his mind racing. The story of what happened to Melissa Harrow was buried beneath years of rumors and unanswered questions. Now, it seemed, the lake had decided to give up one of its secrets. But as he looked at the skeletal remains and the empty driver's seat, Wheeler couldn't shake the feeling that this was just the beginning. Something about the scene didn't sit right. He'd been in law enforcement long enough to know one thing for sure: where there were secrets, there was always more lurking just out of sight. He pulled his coat tighter against the chill and stared out over the frozen expanse of the lake, a sense of foreboding settling over him. "What else are you hiding?" he muttered, more to himself than anyone else. The lake, as always, remained silent. Chapter 2: The Harrow Files. The sound of the rotary phone echoed through the quiet home, pulling Clara Briggs from her morning routine. She glanced at the clock on the wall. 7:15 a.m. Too early for anything good, she thought, wiping her hands on a dish towel and picking up the receiver. "This is Clara," she said, her voice still tinged with sleep. "Clara, it's Dan Wheeler." The sheriff's voice immediately pulled her back into the past. Wheeler wasn't one for casual calls, and Clara, now retired, hadn't heard from him in years. She sank into the worn chair by her kitchen table, gripping the phone tighter. "What's going on, Dan?" she asked, her tone cautious. "It's Melissa Harrow," Wheeler said, pausing for a moment. "We found her, or what's left of her." Clara's breath caught. The name hit her like a punch to the gut. She closed her eyes, letting the sheriff's words sink in. Melissa's disappearance had been her first major case, one that haunted her long after the files were shelved and the leads dried up. "Where?" she finally asked. "Silverwood Lake. Submerged car." The forensics team pulled out remains and her backpack. Her name was on it. Wheeler sighed audibly. "I need you down here. Nobody knows this case like you do." Clara hesitated. Retirement had been a refuge from the ghosts of her past cases, but Melissa's case wasn't just a ghost. It was an open wound. "I'll be there," she said, hanging up before doubt could creep in. By the time Clara arrived at the sheriff's office, the buzz of activity was palpable. The conference room was covered in files and photos, a makeshift command center brimming with memories she'd rather forget. Wheeler stood at the head of the table, gesturing toward a stack of faded folders. "I pulled everything we had on the Harrow case. It's all here." Clara nodded, her eyes scanning the room. The images on the table, Melissa's school photo, the missing posters, the articles about search parties, were all too familiar. She picked up a black and white picture of Melissa, smiling brightly in her favorite overalls, and felt the weight of guilt settle on her shoulders. "You've been over this, I assume," she asked, setting the photo down. "Every word," Wheeler said. "But now that we've got the car, there's a chance we missed something back then." Clara opened the nearest file, flipping through her own handwritten notes from 1987. She remembered the frenzy of the investigation. Parents too scared to let their children out of their sight, rumors of strangers in town, and an avalanche of false leads. "What about the parents?" she asked. "Elaine Harrow. Is she still in town?" "She is," Wheeler said, his tone uneasy. "You know how she is. Never stopped searching, never stopped blaming herself. I already spoke with her briefly. She's willing to talk to you." Clara nodded. Elaine Harrow had been a constant presence during the investigation, distraught, determined, and in her grief, occasionally volatile. Clara grabbed her coat and headed for the door. Elaine Harrow's home was a time capsule of loss. Faded photographs of Melissa lined the walls, surrounded by dusty trinkets and relics of a life that had stood still since 1987. Elaine, now a frail woman with sunken eyes, greeted Clara at the door. "I heard they found her," Elaine said, her voice trembling. "Is it true?" Clara stepped inside, placing a gentle hand on Elaine's shoulder. "We found remains, Elaine. And her backpack. It's a start." Tears filled Elaine's eyes, but she quickly wiped them away. "All these years. I told them she didn't just run off. I told them." "We believe you, Elaine," Clara said, guiding her to the couch. "But I need to ask you some questions. Things I might have missed back then." Elaine nodded, clutching a tissue in her frail hands. "Ask me anything." Clara leaned forward. "Did Melissa ever mention someone watching her? Did she seem afraid of anyone in particular?" Elaine thought for a moment. "There was a man," she said, her voice barely above a whisper. "He came to the house once, looking for her father. Gerald Langston, I think his name was. He gave me a bad feeling the way he looked at Melissa. But my husband told me not to worry about it." "Gerald Langston?" Clara repeated, the name striking a chord in her memory. Did you tell the police about him? Elaine nodded. But nothing ever came of it. They said he was clean. Clara scribbled the name in her notebook. What about your husband? Was there anything he was involved in that could have put Melissa in danger? Elaine hesitated, her eyes darting to a framed photo of her late husband on the mantel. I don't know, she said finally. He kept things from me. There were times he'd come home late, smelling of liquor, muttering about deals gone wrong. Clara's instincts kicked in. Elaine, do you still have anything of his? Papers, journals, anything? Elaine motioned toward a box in the corner. I kept some of his things. I didn't have the heart to throw them out. Clara opened the box, rifling through old invoices, receipts, and business cards. Among the clutter, she found an envelope marked with Langston's name. Inside was a typed letter with cryptic references to payments and warnings. Elaine, Clara said, holding up the letter. This could be important. I'm going to take it back to the station. As she left the house, Clara couldn't shake the feeling that the Harrow family's secrets might have been buried just as deeply as Melissa's body. She clutched the envelope tightly, knowing it could be the key to unraveling the mystery, but also fearing what truths it might reveal. Chapter 3. Echoes of the Past. The hum of the library's microfilm reader faded into the background as Clara scanned old newspapers, filling in the gaps of Victor Kane's troubled history. He wasn't just a name in Melissa Harrow's file anymore. He was a man whose dark obsession may have cost a young girl her life. The picture emerging was haunting, but it still wasn't complete. Clara needed voices from the past to help her fill in the blanks. Melissa's childhood friend, Janet Marsh, was one of those voices. Janet lived in a modest house on the outskirts of Silverwood. Her once vibrant red hair was streaked with gray, and the youthful energy Clara remembered from decades ago had given way to a weariness born of years of guilt. She greeted Clara at the door with a faint smile and a guarded expression. I figured I'd see you after hearing about the lake, Janet said, stepping aside to let Clara in. The house was tidy but sterile, devoid of the warmth and personality Clara had expected. Janet led her to the living room and motioned for her to sit. You've heard the news? Clara asked, studying Janet's face for any flicker of emotion. I have, Janet replied, her voice trembling. It's been all over town. I never stopped thinking about her, you know. Even after everyone else moved on. Clara nodded. You were her best friend, Janet. That's why I need your help now. Janet hesitated, her hands twisting in her lap. What can I do after all these years? Tell me about the days leading up to her disappearance, Clara said gently. Anything unusual? Something she might have said or done? Janet stared at the floor, her eyes misting over. We were just kids, Clara. We didn't think anything bad could happen to us. But something did, Clara pressed. And I think you might know more than you realized at the time. Janet let out a shaky breath. There was a car, she said finally. Black sedan. It used to park near the school. I didn't think much of it at first, but then Melissa started acting strange. Strange how? Clara asked, leaning forward. She said she felt like someone was watching her, Janet said, her voice breaking. She even told me she saw the car near her house one night. Clara's pen flew across her notebook. Why didn't you say anything back then? Janet shook her head, tears spilling down her cheeks. I didn't think it was important. We were just kids. I thought she was imagining things. Clara placed a comforting hand on Janet's shoulder. You couldn't have known, Janet. But this could help us now. Janet nodded, wiping her eyes. There's one more thing, she said hesitantly. A few days before she disappeared, Melissa told me a secret. She made me swear I wouldn't tell anyone. What kind of secret? Clara asked, her heart pounding. Janet hesitated, her expression a mix of fear and guilt. She said her dad was in trouble. She overheard him talking to someone on the phone, saying he owed them money and didn't know how he was going to pay. Did she say who he owed? Clara asked. Janet shook her head. Whoa. But she was scared, Clara. She thought whoever it was might come after her family. Armed with Janet's revelations, Clara returned to the station. Wheeler was waiting for her, a fresh batch of documents spread out on the conference table. "Anything useful?" he asked as Clara sat down. "Plenty," Clara replied, relaying what Janet had told her. "The black sedan is a solid lead. And Melissa's father being in debt lines up with what Elaine and Langston hinted at." Wheeler frowned. "Langston claims Charles paid off his debts, but what if that wasn't the whole story? If Charles couldn't pay, maybe they used Melissa as leverage. Or worse," Clara said grimly. "We need to find out exactly what kind of trouble Charles was in." Wheeler nodded, pushing a stack of papers toward her. "I've been digging into Charles's finances. Turns out he was involved in more than just carpentry. He had a side business importing goods. Some of them not exactly legal." Clara scanned the documents, her stomach sinking. The invoices and shipping records painted a picture of a man desperate to stay afloat, willing to cut corners and take risks. One name kept appearing in the records: Gerald Langston. "This ties Langston to Charles's business," Clara said, tapping the papers. "If Charles couldn't pay his debts, Langston might have seen Melissa as collateral. Or a message," Wheeler added grimly. "What better way to send a warning than to target someone's family?" The next day, Clara and Wheeler followed up on the lead about the black sedan. They combed through old parking violations, surveillance footage, and witness statements from 1987. Their efforts led them to a startling discovery. The sedan had been registered to Victor Kane. The pieces were falling into place. Kane had been working for Langston, keeping an eye on Charles and possibly Melissa. But something still didn't add up. If Kane was involved in Melissa's abduction, why had he written in his journals about trying to protect her? As Clara stared at the evidence, a chilling thought crossed her mind. What if Kane wasn't the villain? What if he was trying to stop something even darker? The room grew silent as she voiced her theory to Wheeler. What if Kane wasn't the one who took Melissa? What if he was trying to save her from whoever did? Wheeler's brow furrowed. You think Langston might have been behind it? Clara nodded slowly. Langston had the motive, the means, and the connections to pull this off. Kane was just a pawn in his game. The theory sent a shiver down Clara's spine. The more she uncovered, the more she realized the truth wasn't just buried. It was deliberately hidden. And if Langston had gone to such lengths to cover his tracks, exposing him would be more dangerous than Clara ever anticipated. Chapter 4: The Ice Cracks. The fluorescent lights of the Silverwood Sheriff's office buzzed faintly as Clara spread the evidence across the long conference table. The letter from Elaine's husband had opened a door she wasn't sure she wanted to walk through. Cryptic references to payments, threats, and veiled mentions of someone named Victor Kane hinted at a dark undercurrent beneath the Harrow family's seemingly normal life. Clara glanced at the clock. It was past midnight, but her mind was racing too fast to care. Wheeler entered the room, carrying two steaming cups of coffee. "You're still here," he said, setting a cup down beside her. "Find anything?" "Plenty," Clara replied, gesturing to the letter. "This Victor Kane character. I've seen his name before, but I can't place it. If he's connected to Langston, and Langston had ties to Melissa's father, this might be our missing link." Wheeler leaned over the table, reading the letter for himself. "Langston's a slippery one," he muttered. "Old money, powerful friends. If he's involved, it won't be easy to get anything out of him." Clara took a sip of coffee, her eyes narrowing. "We don't need easy. We need answers. Let's start with Victor Kane." The next morning, Clara found herself sitting in front of an old microfilm reader at the town library, scanning archived newspapers. Hours passed as she sifted through decades of local headlines. Finally, her persistence paid off. An article from the summer of 1987 detailed the arrest of Victor Kane, a chauffeur employed by none other than Gerald Langston. Kane had been charged with domestic assault but released on bail shortly after his arrest. What caught Clara's attention was the timing. His arrest occurred just 2 weeks after Melissa's disappearance. Clara printed the article and called Wheeler. "I've got something." Kane worked for Langston, and he was arrested right after Melissa vanished. That's too close to be a coincidence. Wheeler didn't hesitate. "Let's pay Langston a visit." Langston's estate was a sprawling ivy-covered mansion on the edge of town, its grandeur an imposing reminder of the man's influence. Wheeler and Clara were greeted at the gate by a butler who reluctantly escorted them into a lavish sitting room. Gerald Langston, now in his 80s, sat in a high-backed chair, a blanket draped over his legs. Despite his frailty, his piercing blue eyes carried the sharpness of a man used to being in control. "Sheriff Wheeler," Langston said, his voice calm and deliberate, "to what do I owe this unexpected visit?" "We're reopening the Harrow case," Wheeler began. "Melissa Harrow's remains were found in Silverwood Lake, along with her father's car." Langston's expression didn't waver, but Clara noticed a flicker of tension in his jaw. "Tragic," he said flatly. "But I don't see how this concerns me." Clara leaned forward. "Victor Kane. He worked for you, didn't he?" Langston's gaze shifted to her, his eyes narrowing. "Victor was a driver. Nothing more." "He was arrested shortly after Melissa disappeared," Clara continued. "And her father had financial ties to you. Care to explain?" Langston's lips pressed into a thin line. "Charles Harrow owed me money. A lot of it. He had a habit of getting involved in things he couldn't handle." "Things like what?" Clara pressed. "That's not your concern," Langston snapped, his composure faltering. "Charles paid his debts. End of story." Clara exchanged a glance with Wheeler. Langston's defensiveness only confirmed her suspicions. "What about Kane?" Wheeler asked. "Where is he now?" Langston hesitated for a moment, then said, "Victor disappeared years ago. If you're hoping to find him, you're wasting your time." "Convenient," Clara muttered. "But we'll see about that." Back at the station, Clara dug deeper into Kane's background. His employment records, court documents, and even his last known address painted a picture of a man who had drifted from job to job, always staying on the edges of society. Then she found it, an abandoned property listed under Kane's name near Silverwood Lake. Clara and Wheeler wasted no time driving out to the cabin. The structure was weathered and overgrown, its windows boarded up. The air was heavy with the scent of damp wood and decay. Inside, the cabin was cluttered with old furniture, newspapers, and a layer of dust thick enough to muffle their footsteps. In the corner of the room, Clara noticed a stack of journals, their pages yellowed with age. She flipped through the first one, her breath catching as she read the entries. Victor Kane had written obsessively about Melissa. He described watching her, following her, and his growing belief that he was the only one who could protect her. The final entries detailed his frustration with Langston and Charles Harrow, whom he accused of putting Melissa in danger. "This guy wasn't just a chauffeur," Clara said, her voice shaking. "He was obsessed with her." Wheeler opened another journal, his face pale as he read. "And it sounds like he tried to save her. He mentions taking her to the lake to get her away from Charles, but then things went wrong." The final page of the last journal sent a chill down Clara's spine. "I couldn't save her. The lake took her, but I'll make sure they never forget. One day, the truth will come out." Clara closed the journal, the weight of the words pressing down on her. The pieces were starting to fit together, but the picture they painted was darker than she'd imagined. Melissa's disappearance wasn't random. It was the result of a chain of betrayals and obsessions that had spiraled out of control. As Clara stepped outside, the cold wind bit at her face. She looked out over the lake, its frozen surface glinting in the fading sunlight. The truth was finally starting to emerge, but she knew there were still secrets hidden beneath the ice, waiting to crack open. Chapter 5. The Langston Connection. The Langston estate loomed like a relic of another world, its towering stone walls and sprawling grounds a testament to wealth built on secrets. Clara couldn't help but feel a sense of unease as she and Wheeler stepped through the grand oak doors into a foyer that reeked of opulence. The butler led them to a sun-drenched conservatory where Gerald Langston awaited, seated in a wheelchair surrounded by lush greenery. Langston looked every bit the aging patriarch, frail yet still exuding an air of command. His piercing blue eyes tracked their every movement, a reminder that his mind, unlike his body, hadn't dulled with age. "Sheriff Wheeler, Detective Briggs," Langston greeted them in a tone that was as cold as the marble floors beneath their feet. "To what do I owe the pleasure?" "We're here about the Harrow case," Wheeler said, pulling out a chair and gesturing for Clara to sit. "You've probably heard we found the car and remains in the lake." Langston's face betrayed no emotion. "Yes, I've read the news. Tragic, after all these years." Clara wasn't interested in pleasantries. "Victor Kane," she said, cutting to the chase. "He worked for you, didn't he?" Langston leaned back in his chair, his expression hardening. "Victor was a driver, one of many in my employ at the time. I fail to see how this is relevant. Did you know he was arrested 2 weeks after Melissa's disappearance?" Clara pressed. "For assault?" Langston's lips thinned. "I was aware of his troubles, yes. But Victor was a troubled man long before he came to work for me." "And yet you hired him," Clara countered. "Why?" Langston's gaze turned icy. "I don't see how my hiring practices are relevant to your investigation." Clara leaned forward. "Because Victor Kane's journals paint a very different picture. He wasn't just a chauffeur. He was watching Melissa. And he mentions you more than once." Langston's composure cracked for the first time. His hand trembled slightly as he adjusted the blanket draped over his legs. "Journals?" he asked, his voice tight. "What exactly do these journals say?" "They suggest that you had dealings with Charles Harrow," Wheeler said. "And that you may have been involved in his financial troubles." Langston chuckled, a dry, humorless sound. "Charles Harrow was a fool who made poor decisions. If he found himself in over his head, that's no fault of mine." "And Melissa?" Clara asked, her voice sharp. "Was she a part of those poor decisions?" Langston's eyes narrowed. "Detective, if you're implying I had anything to do with that girl's disappearance, you're mistaken. Charles owed me money, yes. But I'm not in the business of abducting children." Clara didn't back down. "Then explain why Victor Kane believed he was protecting Melissa from you." Langston's expression darkened, but before he could respond, a door creaked open, and a woman entered the conservatory. She was in her 50s, with sharp features and a no-nonsense demeanor. "Father, is everything all right?" she asked, her eyes darting between Clara and Wheeler. Langston waved her off. "Everything's fine, Vivian. These officers were just leaving." Clara rose slowly, locking eyes with Langston. "This isn't over, Mr. Langston. We'll be back." Back at the station, Clara replayed the conversation in her mind. Langston had been careful with his words, but his body language had told a different story. He was hiding something, of that she was certain. Wheeler joined her in the conference room, carrying a box of files. "Langston's got connections everywhere," he said, dropping the box on the table. "If he's involved, we're going to need more than suspicion to take him down." Clara sighed, opening one of the files. "Then we dig until we find something solid." Hours later, Clara stumbled upon a document that stopped her cold, a land deed for a property near Silverwood Lake, signed over to Langston by Charles Harrow shortly before Melissa's disappearance. The date on the deed matched the timeline of Charles's supposed debt repayment. "He didn't pay Langston in cash," Clara muttered, holding up the deed. "He gave him land." Wheeler frowned. "Why would Langston want a piece of property out by the lake?" "Maybe it wasn't about the land," Clara said. "Maybe it was about what happened on that land." The next morning, Clara and Wheeler drove to the property listed on the deed. The area was remote, a dense stretch of woods that ended in a clearing by the lake. The cabin that once stood there was long gone, reduced to a foundation overgrown with weeds. As they walked the site, Clara's gaze fell on something half buried in the dirt, a rusted metal lockbox. She knelt, brushing away the soil and prying it open. Inside were faded photographs, a child's bracelet, and a stack of letters. The letters were addressed to Langston, written in Charles Harrow's handwriting. They were desperate pleas for more time to repay his debts, accompanied by veiled references to a threat against his family. Clara's hands trembled as she read the last letter. "Please, Gerald. Don't hurt Melissa. I'll get the money. I just need more time." She looked up at Wheeler, her chest tight with anger. He threatened Charles's family. Melissa wasn't leverage. She was a pawn in his power play. Wheeler nodded grimly. And when Charles couldn't pay, Langston made good on his threat. As they left the site, Clara stared out at the frozen lake, the weight of the truth pressing down on her. Langston's wealth and power had allowed him to bury the past, but the cracks in his carefully constructed facade were starting to show. Clara vowed silently that she would bring Langston down, no matter how long it took. Because beneath the ice, there was more than just a car and bones. There was the truth, and she wouldn't stop until she uncovered every last piece of it. Chapter 6. Truth Beneath the Ice. The weight of the letters burned in Clara's hands as she and Wheeler returned to the station. Each word was a dagger, confirming what Clara had suspected. Gerald Langston had orchestrated a sinister scheme that ensnared the Harrow family, and Melissa had paid the ultimate price. The evidence was mounting, but Clara knew they needed more to tie Langston directly to the crime. The letters were damning, but Langston's legal team would argue they were just the desperate ramblings of a debtor. She needed something concrete, something that would tear through Langston's carefully constructed facade. The next day, Clara and Wheeler returned to the station early, the weight of the case pressing on them. Clara dove into the journals they'd found in Victor Kane's cabin, searching for any mention of the property by the lake. She combed through each page, her fingers smudged with dust and ink. Finally, she found an entry that made her heart race. "The girl is in danger. He plans to use the lake as a grave. I won't let it happen. She trusts me. I'll get her out." Wheeler, standing behind her, read the entry over her shoulder. Kane wasn't just a pawn. He was trying to save her. Clara nodded, her mind racing. But he failed. Whatever happened that night, he couldn't stop it. And Langston made sure the evidence disappeared. Literally. Wheeler grabbed his coat. "We need to confront Langston. If he's as guilty as this makes him sound, we might be able to push him into slipping up." Langston's estate was eerily quiet when they arrived, the sprawling grounds devoid of the usual staff. The butler, hesitant as ever, led them back to the conservatory. Langston sat in his wheelchair, his daughter Vivian standing beside him like a sentry. "This is starting to feel like harassment, Sheriff," Langston said coldly. "Unless you've got a warrant, I suggest you leave." Clara ignored him, pulling Victor Kane's journal from her bag and setting it on the table. "Do you recognize this?" Langston's gaze flicked to the journal, but his expression remained neutral. "Should I?" "It's Victor Kane's," Clara said. "And it contains details about your involvement with Charles Harrow and Melissa." Langston scoffed. Victor was a troubled man. Whatever he wrote is hardly reliable. Clara leaned forward. "He wrote about the lake. He wrote about you using it to cover up a crime. And now we've got letters from Charles Harrow begging you not to hurt his daughter. How much longer do you think you can keep this act up, Gerald?" Langston's jaw tightened, but it was Vivian who spoke. "Enough," she snapped, stepping in front of her father. "You come here with accusations and half-baked theories, but you have no proof." Clara turned her sharp gaze to Vivian. "You've known all along, haven't you? You've helped him cover this up." Vivian's eyes flickered with something Clara couldn't quite place. Fear, perhaps, or guilt. "You don't know what you're talking about." "I think I do," Clara said. "And I think you've been cleaning up your father's messes for years." Langston slammed his hand on the table, his voice rising. "Get out. This witch hunt is over. You have nothing." Clara stepped back but fixed Langston with a steely glare. "We'll see about that." Back at the station, Clara and Wheeler regrouped. Langston's defensiveness had only strengthened their resolve. They decided to bring in forensic experts to re-examine the Harrow car and the remains. If there was anything Langston had missed in his efforts to hide the truth, they would find it. The forensic team worked tirelessly, analyzing every inch of the car. It wasn't long before they found something, a hair lodged in the car's doorframe. The DNA matched Melissa, but there was something else. Traces of another individual's DNA were also found on the same sample. Langston, Clara muttered as the results came in. It has to be him. But the most chilling discovery came from inside the car's trunk. Tucked into the corner was a scrap of fabric, a piece of a men's handkerchief embroidered with the initials GL. Clara stared at the evidence, her heart pounding. "This is it," she said. "This ties him to the scene." The next morning, armed with a warrant, Clara and Wheeler returned to the Langston estate. This time there were no pleasantries. Langston's face twisted with rage as the officers entered, Vivian shouting protests as they searched the premises. In Langston's study, Clara found a hidden drawer in his desk. Inside was a collection of items that made her blood run cold. A photograph of Melissa Harrow, a set of keys that matched the Harrow car, and a ledger detailing Charles Harrow's debts. Langston's face went pale as Clara held up the items. "You're done, Gerald," she said, her voice steady. "It's over." Langston's composure shattered. "You think you know everything," he hissed. "You don't understand the world I come from. Sometimes sacrifices have to be made." Clara's stomach churned at his words. "You sacrificed an innocent child to cover your tracks. And now you're going to pay for it." As Langston was taken into custody, Clara looked at the frozen lake in the distance. The truth had finally surfaced, but it came at a heavy cost. Melissa's story wasn't just a tale of betrayal and greed. It was a reminder of the darkness that could fester beneath the surface of even the most serene places. Clara vowed that Melissa's name would never be forgotten. Justice had been a long time coming, but it had finally arrived. Chapter 7. Shattered Reflections. The quiet in the Silverwood Sheriff's office was heavy, filled with the echoes of what had just transpired. Gerald Langston, the untouchable patriarch who had ruled over his empire for decades, now sat in a holding cell. His once commanding presence was diminished, replaced by the hollow gaze of a man whose secrets had finally been unearthed. For Clara Briggs, it was a bittersweet victory. As Clara sorted through the case files on her desk, Wheeler entered the room. He tossed a manila folder onto the table. "The lab confirmed it," he said. "The DNA in the car matches Langston's. Between that and the evidence we found at his house, there's no way his lawyers can wiggle him out of this." Clara nodded, but her expression remained solemn. "It doesn't bring Melissa back." Wheeler sat across from her, studying her face. "You've done more for that girl than anyone else, Clara. You gave her a voice after all these years." Clara sighed, leaning back in her chair. "It's not enough. Elaine Harrow spent decades blaming herself, thinking she could have done something to save her daughter. And Melissa? She never got the chance to grow up, to live her life. Justice feels hollow when it comes this late." Wheeler didn't have an answer for that. He simply nodded, letting the silence stretch between them. Later that afternoon, Clara drove to Elaine Harrow's house. The elderly woman greeted her at the door, her frail hands trembling as she gestured Clara inside. The living room was unchanged. Photos of Melissa still adorned every surface, a shrine to the daughter Elaine had loved and lost. "They told me you arrested him," Elaine said, her voice barely above a whisper. "Langston." Clara sat beside her on the couch. "We did. And we have enough evidence to put him away for the rest of his life." Elaine's eyes filled with tears, but she didn't cry. Instead, she stared at the photo of Melissa on the mantel, her lips pressing into a thin line. "It doesn't bring her back," she said, echoing Clara's own thoughts from earlier. "No, it doesn't," Clara admitted. "But it means he can't hurt anyone else." Elaine reached for Clara's hand, squeezing it tightly. "Thank you," she said, "for never giving up on her." Clara swallowed the lump in her throat and nodded. She deserved the truth. The trial of Gerald Langston was swift and decisive. The evidence against him was overwhelming, and his cold demeanor in court only solidified the jury's decision. He was convicted on multiple charges, including conspiracy, kidnapping, and accessory to murder. The sentence: life in prison without parole. But for Clara, the case didn't truly feel closed. A week after the trial, Clara returned to Silverwood Lake. The ice had begun to thaw, revealing the dark waters beneath. She stood at the shore, staring out at the place where Melissa's car had been hidden for so many years. She thought about the journals Victor Kane had left behind. While his obsession with Melissa had been disturbing, there was no denying that he had tried to save her. In his own twisted way, he had cared for her more than the people who should have protected her. Clara tossed a stone into the water, watching the ripples spread. The lake had kept its secrets for decades, but it had finally given them up. She wondered how many other stories were hidden beneath the surface, waiting for someone to uncover them. The town of Silverwood moved on, as towns always do. But for Clara, the Harrow case would never truly leave her. It wasn't just about justice. It was about the weight of loss, the fragility of innocence, and the darkness that lurked in even the most unexpected places. As she drove away from the lake, Clara made a silent promise: to keep searching, to keep fighting, and to never let the voices of the lost be forgotten.